Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2016, Episode 19. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, joined once again by former Husker All-American, Big 8 Athlete of the Year, 1994, Dr. Rob Zadiska. What's up, Doc?
How are you doing tonight?
You know, it's good, and we are recording on a Wednesday night, well after the Nebraska-Iowa game, because it's finally taken you this long to want to get back into the studio.
Dear Lord. You know, I texted you earlier this week and said, can we just do this to get the pain over with?
Listen, I think there's a lot of people who think that I take great joy in what happened last Friday. And I really don't, because I was hoping for a much more competitive game. I was hoping for a game that was a lot more enjoyable to watch. I was hoping to watch.
You were standing on your front porch when I walked up singing the Hawkeye fight song,
I only did that to be a total prick, and because you know I do that in a loving spirit. And because, I think a lot of people, listen, I'm not going to lie. I'm perfectly honest on this podcast that I grew up an Iowa fan. I've always been an Iowa fan. And you're a Michigan State fan. You always have been a Michigan State fan. That's a team I grew up with. But, I covered Nebraska for almost 20 years. So you still have a relationship, A, with people in the media relations department, former players such as yourself.
The fan base.
The fan base. I mean, people still talk to me about Husker football. And I enjoy, Dave Remington is one of the greatest Huskers of all time. He knows that I grew up an Iowa fan, but he still likes me hosting this podcast, which is hosted by the Remington Trophy presentation, which is coming up on January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. If you want to see Rob, if you want to see myself, get your tickets now at remingtontrophy.com. Again, remingtontrophy.com is the place to get those wonderful Remington Trophy presentation tickets. Also, I want to thank Husker Hounds for coming on board this year. Husker Hounds has been a great sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. The holiday season is upon us. Scotty's got three locations in the Omaha area. You can also purchase your Husker holiday gifts at huskerhounds.com. But when you need holiday gifts that have Husker written all over it, go to Husker Hounds, one of three Omaha area locations, including the new one at 149th and Maple. And of course, I want to thank Husker Max, who distributes this podcast each and every week. But getting back to kind of what we were saying, not the way, to be perfectly honest, I had no idea the way the game was going to end. When we had our last podcast, I said I thought I would win, but only because of Husker mistakes. If I would have told you that Nebraska doesn't turn the ball over at all, do you think Iowa wins the game 40-10?
No, I'd say Nebraska wins.
Yes, I would agree. I thought it was going to take a safety like it got against Michigan. I thought it was going to take a couple turnovers, a defensive battle. I really did expect a defensive struggle, which we did not see. And my question for you is, how do you not show up at all on the last game of the year?
And this is the thing. I've been trying to wrap my head around this for, 4 or 5 days now. I've got nothing. The why I have absolutely nothing. I mean, this was one of these just mind-blowing performances, and there's not a lot of them in Nebraska history where a team just flat out doesn't show up to play.
But here's the deal, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Last year when Iowa and Nebraska played, Nebraska outgained them by 200 yards. I think we both came away from that game going, Iowa got lucky.
That was a dirt on the field outside of the turnovers.
Yes.
Outside of the turnovers and two, I'll still say lucky plays. They were well blocked, but they were only well blocked because the Nebraska's backup safety, since Nathan Jerry had been ejected, wasn't in position where he was supposed to be. Outside of those two plays, it was a complete and utter dirt road ass whooping by Nebraska.
Which leads me
and the turnovers.
Which leads me to this question. Because they didn't show up, I watched this game not once but twice now, and I've come away going, just the way everything looked.
You think Nebraska came in thinking they were going to kick the shit out of them as long as they didn't turn it over?
No, here's what I've come away after watching the game a couple times. is that Nebraska looks so bad, I come away that if they played 10 times, Iowa would win 10 times. They look so not prepared, not ready, not even on the same. This is sad on the athletic playing field.
It wasn't even close. And you want to know the weird thing? It's not like these are drastically different teams from last year. And you can say what you want about.
Guess who got the drop can of beer?
Dude, you're supposed to tap it, dude.
I thought you took the drop can of beer.
So did I, but doesn't they look alike?
Rob brought the beer tonight, and he was
I dropped a
he
can was getting out of the car.
But he was joking. He goes, "I was kind of like Nebraska. I didn't care. I just grabbed what was in the fridge." And he actually grabbed some prime Omaha's own Brickway Brewery Pilsner, which is very good beer. We're big fans of Brickway Brewery.
They make good beer.
They make really good white whiskey. So we're drinking the pills. We're a big fan of the pills at Brickway. If you ever get a chance, they let your dog, you can take your dog down there. But it's down in the old market. It's a great brewery. They also have a distillery. Check it out. It's a Brickway Brewery. We're big fans of the pills, and they have a great oatmeal stout. Oh, my God. It's to die for.
They're another one of those craft brewers, micro brewers that – it's consistent. It's consistently good.
Exactly. Now, let's get back to what we were talking about. And that was Nebraska. And I don't mean this as any disrespect. I'm telling you,
Rob. They looked like shit.
They did.
And it was across the board. And I can't, you could come out and say, well, okay, God, they didn't have anybody at quarterback. Tommy Armstrong's hurt bad. And he's all they got. There's no way they're going to put Riker Fife in. And Riker Fife's hurt. Now, granted, it's his left hand that he had surgery on, but you're trying to take snaps, catch balls coming from the center. You need both hands. You can't do it one-handed. That leaves you a backup wide receiver who's highly concussion-prone in Darlington is really your only other quarterback. I get that. I understand that. That doesn't explain why the defense looked like hell, too. I mean, this was... I would say consistently the best performance I've seen out of Iowa's offensive line this year.
I would agree with you 100%. And I've seen every Iowa game this year.
They shoved Nebraska's defense all over the field. And you can say, well, they had them well scouted and it was well coached because, man, they had the zone blocking schemes. The running backs were cutting back into the cutback lanes perfectly. Yeah, it was a well-coached game by Iowa's coaches. But man, it was just a butt kicking up front by Iowa's lines on both sides of the ball.
Okay, let's go back and start with Nebraska's offense. And this is Tommy Armstrong had guys open, he kept overthrowing. But my question is why do you keep going long?
And that was my question during the game is it was almost like we saw this complete Tommy reverting to being the Tommy of old.
Is that Tommy or is it the offensive coordinator?
Well, I think he's got the option to go long if he truly thinks it's there. The problem is that the situation was calling for a shorter pass. I mean, it was third and four, and you're launching it downfield. And he wasn't even looking at the underneath guys. It's not like he looked at read one, read two, read three. Shoot, everybody's covered. I got to go the long option because that's the only thing that's left. He was dropping back and chucking it. Now, here's the goofy thing about the only place that I ever really saw Nebraska's offense look okay in this game, Nebraska's pass protection wasn't horrible.
I would agree with you.
Tommy actually had some time, and I would not have expected that. But Nebraska's pass protection was actually okay. Now, Iowa did not throw a ton of blitzes at him in the passing game, which is probably why, maybe some of the underneath guys weren't as open as I'd like to think they were. But he wasn't even trying to go underneath and just get the first down. He was taking the money shot every time.
Were you disappointed in the fact that it just didn't seem Nebraska was trying to establish the run whatsoever?
I was very disappointed in... I don't know. Maybe they thought they wouldn't be able to do it. Iowa's played some okay run defense.
I mean, Jahlil Johnson's a hell of a player. Josie Jewell, how he wasn't a first-team All-Big Ten guy, I'm still baffled. He leads the Big Ten in tackles. There's some good guys there. But I know what they were trying to do.
Jewell had a really nice game.
I know they were trying to exploit the Iowa defensive backs. And Desmond King, first-team All-Big Ten, he didn't have the year that he had last year. And with Maben out, I think they were trying to expose that. But still, you have to be able to run the football. Iowa proved that. Iowa ran all over them.
Well, and they stuck to it.
Yes.
And you know what? It's the long excuse me, fighting a little bit of a
That's fine.
Bronchitis.
We're not live
from yelling at the TV this weekend.
And you had every reason to yell. I mean, at one point you just texted me in the middle of the game, you went, "Oh fuck."
Yeah. You could see it from early on.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not saying you've got to have a strong, hardcore, emotional motivation going into these games. Because sometimes, you know, being emotionally motivated can really help you. It can hurt you. The thing is, it's a well that sooner or later goes dry when it comes to being fired up and being motivated. That being said, when you go into a game, you've got to have your mindset ready. You've got to have a mindset that you're going to go out there and you're going to absolutely battle for the next 60 minutes. And if you don't have that mindset ready to go at the first snap, it is the hardest thing. That switch is the hardest switch to flip, to go from, yeah, I'm kind of ready, maybe, sort of. I don't know. I wonder what's on TV back in the hotel room. To go from that to, I think I'm going to kick the ever-loving crap out of these guys for the next several quarters. It doesn't work that way. And you've got to have, I mean, if you've ever played major college football, you're working on getting that mindset right. The moment you finish watching the game film from the previous week's game. So, I mean, literally Sunday afternoon, Monday afternoon, that's when you're working on getting that mindset of, I'm going to kill these guys play after play after play the entire game. From the very first snap until the final gun, I'm going to punch these guys in the face as hard as I can. You're getting that mindset going on Monday, for God's sakes. You're not going to get it going. You're not going to all of a sudden turn around going, oh, maybe we should show up and play today. You're not going to do that halfway through the first quarter. And when I sent you that text, I'm sitting here watching. By that time, I'd watched a quarter and a half of football, and I'm sitting here, the thought going through my mind is, there is no way on God's green earth that they are going to turn this around. The game is over.
You know, I was thinking about you, and I think you sent a tweet out at some point, either after the game or this week, and you can follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, at DocTalkSports, again, at DocTalkSports on Twitter. And it was either Banker or Langsdorf, and I forget who said it. Said, Iowa's practices must be a bloodbath. And I got to thinking, there's the difference in philosophy. Because if your practices aren't a bloodbath, that shows you why you're not physical maybe late in the season. Yes or no? You had a tweet that said the toughest games you had every week were your practices.
Hands down. I'm trying to think of game I played in that was worse physically in terms of me walking out of it going, oh my God, I feel like I got hit like a truck. That was worse than like a really hard Saturday scrimmage in the fall or a good spring practice scrimmage.
Hey, I heard a story, and maybe this has been out there, but I'd never heard it before. Was there a dirt floor in the basement of the Coliseum where you guys used to go at it?
There's a place that was actually buried underneath the East Stadium.
Okay.
And it's called the Mushroom Gardens, and it's basically they got a small track set up down there.
Then you would go down there and just kick the shit out of one another, right?
It was, we would go down there and do some practicing down there. Most of the kind of the sheer gladiatorial stuff we did was actually in the old Schulte Field
House. Okay.
Was actually where it was at, which at that point, that had kind of taken the place of the old Mushroom Gardens underneath the East Stadium. But that old Schulte Field House, I mean, it was God, those were some brutal practices.
But when you hear a coach from your team say, boy, their practices must be a bloodbath, almost in a way that so I was like, were you jealous of that? We're like,
yeah. I mean, it was almost like awe. Don't say that. Yeah, don't say that.
Because you're showing your weakness. You're almost saying that your practices aren't a bloodbath. Your practices aren't competitive.
Well, think about Pat Fitzgerald. After that Nebraska game,
yeah,
he said they changed the way they practiced. And he said basically they went to much more physical, much more a much higher level of contact in all of their practices. He took what was looking like kind of a pretty sad season, yeah, and got it turned around. It's not like Northwestern had this 10-2 season like they did last year, but they had a horrendous start to this year, yeah, and they turned it around and finished up with an okay year. Basically, because Fitzgerald decided I'm going to start putting guys through the grinder.
So let's go. But you brought up a couple things. I was able to run the football just all over Nebraska, which was shocking to me. I mean, LeSean Daniels and Akram Wadley are pretty good backs.
It's not like Wisconsin doesn't have a good established hardcore running game. And Nebraska hung with them because they were able to stop it most of the time.
But Wadley had the 75-yard run. Then LeSean.
And it was beautifully blocked.
It really was.
Oh, my God, that was beautifully blocked.
And then Daniels just had a hell of a day. So,
yeah.
But why was that? I mean, was their offensive line that much better than Nebraska's? I mean, it was a four or five-yard push.
They were last Friday. There's if I want to play the Nebraska homer here.
And that's fine. I want you to.
And it's a little devil's advocate here. I don't know if I believe in what I'm saying, though. I really don't. But I'll go back to the fact that both the offensive line and defensive line for Nebraska, like I said, I mean, I keep using the phrase running on fumes, and they have been since basically the start of the conference season. It has been a rough year for injuries. They have had no depth due to poor recruiting under the previous regime in terms of bringing in linemen, numbers of linemen, attrition of linemen, guys transferring, guys going to the NFL, so on and so forth, as well as injuries. It's just absolutely decimated the two lines, the offensive line particularly. I think that played a role in it, but I think you got a defensive line that I think those guys are tired at this point. I think the linebackers are in a position where they've had to take up the slack. And again, I'm not saying Nebraska's defensive line hasn't been trying hard, but sooner or later when you don't have enough quality backups because Greg McMullen quit. I shouldn't say quit. He had other things. He moved on in life. I'll be nice about it. Greg McMullen quit. Valentine and Malik Collins go pro, and Williams transfers to Michigan State. There's a starting D-line equivalent gone. It takes talk about a talent drain right there in one offseason. And I think that hurts. Now, are you saying?
But you say do I really believe it?
Yeah. I don't think I do, and the reason is I throw the Ohio State game out as an anomaly. That was where I think, you hit an absolute buzzsaw of an environment, which Ohio State is. You hit a massive pool of NFL talent, which Ohio State is. You had Nebraska kind of on their heels with, again, lack of depth, all the injuries on the line, so on and so forth. And then your starting quarterback, who essentially your offense this year is really kind of hinged upon, is out of the game. And it's one of those sucking the emotion out of a team out of the game. Here's an example for Husker fans that remember this. 1988, Nebraska at UCLA. UCLA's got Troy Aikman at quarterback. Nebraska had destroyed them in Lincoln the year before, just blew them out of the water. One of the first series of the game, Dana Brinson goes up for a pass. This was back when helmet-to-helmet contact was allowed. UCLA had an all-conference safety who just drills Dana Brinson. You can find it on YouTube. Drills him mid-air, helmet-to-helmet collision. completely knocks him unconscious. This was not a Dana Brinson on a stretcher leaving the stadium giving the thumbs up. He didn't regain consciousness till he was at the hospital. I mean, it was a gut punch, and it completely took all the fight. It was one hit that took all the fight out of Nebraska. Tommy going down against Ohio State took all the fight out. Same kind of thing. It's an emotional gut punch. And so I take the Ohio State game and I throw it out. The only other loss going into the Iowa game was the Wisconsin game. And it was, God, I hate calling things moral victories. That was almost what I would consider a moral victory. We went up there and we were a shitty no call by the officials from beating Wisconsin at Wisconsin in overtime. And Nebraska's defense played really
amazing.
Spirited. They were on fire that day. They were all over the place. Saw none of that against Iowa.
Which was shocking because if Minnesota would have beaten Nebraska, Nebraska would have had a chance to win the Big Ten West.
No, Minnesota beats Wisconsin. You said if Minnesota beats Nebraska.
No, I'm sorry. But yeah, beats Wisconsin.
I know. It was still on the table.
Yes.
The reasons to be upset after the game, and more so the reasons to be fired up to go in and win this game, if anything, to get revenge for last year in Lincoln.
Well, and you know, Iowa media was talking about if you take, you know, Iowa was up 17 points the year Nebraska came back.
In Iowa City,
I mean,
yeah.
Iowa's really close to winning four straight in the series.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Iowa, if you look at them on the whole, has been the stronger team since Nebraska's joined the Big Ten.
Is this a wake-up call for Nebraska? You have to take Iowa serious. I mean, I think it's good for the rivalry, and I think fans need to start realizing you have to take every game seriously. And I think I speak for Husker fan here because I think I got a pretty good pulse of it, and that is they don't care if they lose. Wisconsin's a perfect example. Be competitive. Show up.
I agree. If you're going to lose a few games.
Osborne
lost 2 to 3 games a year on average up until 1993.
Yeah.
I mean, he had that spell there in the year real, like 80 to 83, 80 to 84, where it seemed like they went 12-1 every freaking year. But He was a 10-2 coach most of the time he was down in Lincoln. Losing a few games is okay if you go down swinging like gangbusters.
Exactly. Now, I thought Tom Chattel had maybe one of the most brilliant columns he's written in years. And
His and Lee Barfnick's, which was actually a rerun from August, talk about a premonition. Tom's ran in the Sunday paper as well with Chattel's.
Lee's ran in the Sunday paper.
I'm sorry, yeah. Lee's ran in the Sunday paper along with Tom's. Both were great.
And Tom's basic premise was, you've got to let the 90s go. You're stuck in a time loop. You have to let it go.
No, and I'm what do you mean? And I wasn't sure I wholly understood what Tom meant by that. Like, you got to stop comparing Nebraska to the 90s?
Well, I think the college football landscape has changed.
Or you need to stop thinking, hey, we can be like we were in the 90s.
I think a little bit of both. I think you got to stop comparing to the 90s, and you have to stop thinking that you can be like that again. The college football landscape from when you played, Rob, is completely different. It's absolutely completely different. And let's not forget,
I don't know if it's as different. You know, here's where the difference lies is because of the scholarship limits and the spread of talent. I think that's changed things a bit. But I don't know if it's truly that different. I mean, let me ask you this.
Okay.
When you look at the strongest teams currently in the Big Ten, name the top four teams in the Big Ten.
Top four teams right now would be Michigan, Ohio State.
Hold on. One at a time, I'm going to tell you the things they do well. Okay, Michigan.
Michigan.
Pro-style offense, good solid defense.
Ohio State.
Not really a pro-style offense, but they can run the ball. When they play well, they're running the ball really well, and they play a great defense.
Penn State.
Pro-style offense, really solid defense.
Wisconsin.
pro-style offense, really solid defense. How about nationally? Let's go nationally. Who's awesome?
Alabama right now is the only awesome team in college football.
Okay. Pro-style offense, great defense.
Clemson.
A little bit of a wild card. I mean, they got sort of a weird-ass spread option offense and really good defense. Clemson just, like, out-athleticizes people. But here's my point, though. It's not like Alabama's doing anything crazy. If you watch Alabama play, it's amazing how not crazy. It's not Oregon with Marcus Mariota. It's not this weird.
Yeah. I mean, their quarterback's mobile. He's got a good arm, but
yeah. Yeah, he gives you problems because he can move around. But I mean, the really, really good teams are doing two things really well. They're running the ball really, really well, and they're playing just ferocious defense.
So Mike Riley gets back. He fires Bruce Reed. Is that the only guy that needs to go? We're talking special teams. And if you go watch that game, special teams played a key because Iowa had great field position after punts, after kickoff returns. I mean, special teams was...
Man, it's talk about a weak spot. It's one of these things that you look at. The thing that has saved Nebraska's special teams the last couple of years was Sam Fultz and Drew Brown. And this year we didn't have Fultz. Caleb's, I think he's a kid that... incredibly good athlete. I think he could be an awesome punter. He needs polishing, he needs experience, and I'm not sure he's getting that coaching.
But is a special teams coach enough to put a head on a plate? Is that gonna keep people happy? I mean, people go, okay, you fired a special teams coach. What else needs to go?
No, well, I think Nebraska's wide receivers are continuing to get better, and I think Keith's a great wide receiver.
Okay, they're loading up on wide receivers. Do you think that's smart? I mean, don't you need to go get some offensive linemen?
The thing is, they're signing those guys too. I've been very impressed with the recruiting alignment that they've been getting.
How about X's and O's and actual fundamentals? Do you think they're good fundamental coaches?
Hold on, let's go down the positions. Okay, so wide receiver, no, I think you got a great coach.
I would agree.
O-line, I really like Kavanaugh. I truly think he polished a turd this year. I think he had few guys to work with. I think he had a ton of inexperience to work with.
Okay.
He had a murderer's row of injuries he had to work around. And I think he did an amazing job with what he had. But, I mean, he was truly trying to make lemonade out of lemons. D-line. Again, you lost an entire – you lost two for sure because they are playing in the NFL, a potential third NFL guy in McMullen, and a fourth guy who is a starting caliber D-lineman all before the season started.
Okay.
I thought Perella did a great job. Plus, I think he's a really good recruiter. Okay. I think he's a highly – God, I hate saying this, but I mean for – He looks like a 1960s D-line coach. He does. And I don't know how well that works in this day and age, but he's getting guys here. So I think at worst, Perella and Kavanaugh get a pass just because of what they had depth-wise to deal with. Bray at the linebacker spot, I think he's done a solid job. That Iowa game was really maybe the only game where I looked and I was like, what the hell are these guys doing? They're just out of position. Of course, they usually had an Iowa offensive lineman shoving them out of position.
I'm not taking any pleasure in that. You know that,
no,
right?
But I think he's done solid. I think when you made a position change and then had Banker himself start taking over some of the coaching of the defensive backs, I think from the beginning of last season through this year, you've seen a consistent improvement in Nebraska's defensive backfield play. Now, when you get burned on a play action pass because the running game's been absolutely slaughtering you, Okay, well, that's going to happen.
Okay, how about the overall defense?
On the whole, I think I'm still maybe one of like six people in the entire state of Nebraska that actually looks at what they've done the last 2 years and has thought, shit, I think he's really doing a pretty good job.
Okay.
Nebraska's run defense last year was awesome. Losing Collins and Valentine really hurt. But they shut down most teams' running game pretty well this year.
But we also have to go back, much like Iowa last year. It wasn't like when you really get the overall resume of teams you faced, not that stellar.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. But, I mean, they've played some teams that could have beat us last year.
Yeah, you're right.
Could have beat a Pelini team.
Yeah,
I think Wisconsin guts a Pelini team up in Madison.
You're probably right. I'll give you that to you.
So I think they've actually made strides. I think Banker might be the most maligned guy on the team in terms of overall coaching by the general fan base. Yeah. And like I said, I will go to my grave saying I think he's actually doing some very good stuff.
Okay, let's go to the offensive side of the ball.
Okay, I already touched on Kavanaugh. I already touched on Williams. You know, running back, I think they're playing solid. I don't think it's a great talent depth there, though. I'll be curious.
I would agree with you. I was a little disappointed in the running backs this year.
Curious to see how Trey does as next year rolls around. I hope he's pretty good. It's not like there's an Amon Green in that bunch or a Lawrence Phelps or a Calvin Jones or a Damon Benning or anybody like that, a Clinton Childs. I mean, God, Clinton Childs would be, he'd be a three-year starter on this team with these guys. Easy. And, I mean, you think about how far the talent level's fallen. Clinton Childs was basically
third stringer,
fourth stringer. And it's not because he wasn't good. Clinton's
a really good athlete.
Oh, my God, the guy was incredible running back. Hit like a truck. He had Damon Benning on the team. He had Lawrence Phillips on the team. He had Calvin Jones on the team. What are you going to do? I mean, it's
how much you can do.
How much you can. Langsdorf and Riley. I think in terms of trying to work around the talent they had, because you had an offense that did not fit their system in any way, shape, or form. And everybody kind of thinks, hey, if you're a great football coach, you should be able to coach any system. Doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. Tom Osborne knew and developed and had a very good pro-style passing offense through the late 60s and most of the 1970s. And it wasn't until Turner Gill hit the door in whatever that was, 79, 80, that he switched over to the option offense, because all of a sudden he had a guy who could do that very well. He didn't switch over to kind of the spread option type of packages that we saw in the early and mid-90s until he had Tommy Frazier and Brooke Behringer.
So I'm listening to Nick
Baugh. But hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
It even took Osborne. I mean, it was weird being down there in the really early 90s, 90, 91, 92, maybe even oozing into 93, that you really saw the evolution of the offense.
Yeah.
That we ran 93, 94 through 97. And there was a learning curve there. Now, you had a guy who was truly an offensive genius running it. There's not a lot of true offensive geniuses out there. Osborne was one. There's not a lot of those guys.
He was a Mensa.
Sure.
I totally agree with you. It's funny, the more...
But even Osborne had a learning curve for stuff. You're taking Mike Riley and saying, hey, here's kind of a spread option style running back with an arm playing quarterback. All you know is a pro style passing offense, a West Coast offense. Adapt that to this. I mean, Joe Gans had a great quote on a blog about how he's watching practice and they're trying to run sort of like that delay zone read running plays.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe was making the comment that you watch this and Riley's and Langsdorf have the running back completely lined up in the wrong spot to be able to effectively run the play. And we're talking about, when I say the wrong spot, we're talking about a matter of 3 feet, 2 feet.
Yeah.
Not much. We're talking to at first glance, it doesn't even look like he's out of position. But if you know how to run a zone read running play, that running back needed to take a step and a half over. Otherwise, there's no way the play's going to work. Do you know why that's where Langsdorf and Riley had him at? Guess. Because they didn't know where to put him. They'd never run this shit before. It's completely foreign to
them. Well, and that leads me. I'm listening
and,
to
you. And I think they adapted what they knew pretty damn, excuse me, pretty damn well. They went from last year where the play calling drove me nuts to this year where I was actually kind of liking it, but it's a learning curve. They were learning how to make these adjustments and move what they knew and work around the players they had and what those players were good at. I mean, it's kind of like when Bill Callahan tried to make Joe Daly into a drop back passing quarterback, and we lost game after game after game. Because that's all Callahan would do. It's like, hey Joe, we're running West Coast. You're going. You got to get that ball downfield, buddy. And it was just, oh God, it was so painful to watch. At least Langsdorf and Riley are saying, okay, you know what? We've got more of a running offense here. We've got a spread option offense here. We got a zone read offense here. Even though we have no clue how to do this, we're going to run this offense.
And that leads me into it. So I'm listening to Game Time with Nick Baugh on 1620 The Zone in Omaha. Nick's a great guy, knows his shit inside and out, I think. And he made a very...
For Lincoln Southeast grad.
Right? He made a very astute analogy this week. He goes, you know, I'm not saying that Tanner Lee is a better athlete than Tommy Armstrong, because
but
that's probably not the case.
Fitted for the system.
And that's exactly what he's saying. He goes, Nebraska is going to automatically have more success at the quarterback position because of the fit that Tanner Lee makes ahead of Tommy Armstrong. Agree?
Oh, I totally agree. You're not going to see, I mean, the last 2 years with Langsdorf and Riley, they were trying to run, I hate using this guy's name, they were essentially trying to run Tim Beck's offense with Tim Beck's players, because that's what they had to work with.
If they didn't, it would have been 5-7 all over again.
It would have been Callahan year one all
yes.
over again. And last year
was kind of that way.
It kind of nearly was, because, like I said, they were trying to learn this stuff on the fly as well. I mean, it was a learning curve for them, too. I mean, I just, I think in hindsight, like I said, I could be completely proven wrong here. I, honest to God, think those guys did a freaking amazing job given the circumstances. I mean, you're asking somebody who's been a classic English lit professor their entire life and told them, hey, guess what? This semester, you're teaching algebra. It's not going to fly very well. These guys gave it a try and did a pretty good job of it. I mean, they went from 6-7 to 9-3, and most of that improvement came out of nothing other than learning curve. And I don't think they get much credit for that.
So Nebraska, and we don't want to bring you too down because we've been talking 38 minutes about how bad things have been. The season obviously still a success. You got 9 wins. That's a successful season. I don't care how you do it.
Here's the thing. I mean, you're talking about 9 wins, and here's kind of another sore point with me, because I know on Twitter so many people are going back and forth about the whole, well, he got 9 wins, that's as good as Osborne, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. You know, here's the thing. Under Osborne, it's not like we set out to win at least 9 games a year. It's not like we sat down and went, here's the goal for the year. We're going to win 9 games.
your goal was to win championships, wasn't it?
I got to be honest. It even wasn't to win championships. The goal was to go out and win the next game.
Okay, so the old cliche, one game at a time.
It was very much one game at a time. We weren't looking at we went out. Our goal was purely to go out and put out the absolute best possible performance that week. And winning itself rarely played into the motivation. I mean, it was assignments. It was holding on to the football, not having those turnovers. It was worrying about things like third down conversions. It was how many yards are we going to get on first down? It was how precise are we going to be with our blocking assignments? How far off the ball are we going to blow these guys? How physical are we going to be? Those were the things you did not go into a game worrying about winning the game. That was probably the last thing on your mind. When you went into any football game I ever played in, all I was thinking about was my assignments, my footwork, and just kicking the ever-loving crap out of the guy across from me. And if all 11 guys on the field at a given point in time are doing that, you're going to win the game.
So
yeah, the 9 wins thing just happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't a goal.
That just became the standard, though. You understand that.
And I understand it became a standard, but how we came to that, I think, has gotten lost. It's not about getting 9 wins or 10 wins or winning championships. It's going out and playing like you did against Wisconsin, but doing – because I'll be the first to tell you, that might have been one of the best performances that Nebraska played this year in terms of – I mean, there were some blown assignments that cost Nebraska. But in terms of going out, playing with fire, playing with – again, not even motivation, playing with the proper mindset from the start of the game to the end – and playing with this utter desire to just crush the guy across from you. The Wisconsin game might have been the best performance I've seen out of Nebraska this year, and it was a loss. If Nebraska went out this season and played like that in every single game, well, you're still going to lose to Wisconsin because we did.
But I don't think you lose to Iowa.
You're probably still losing to Ohio State because, you know what, they are that much better.
Yeah.
You kick the shit out of Iowa.
I don't know if you kick the shit out of them.
I think if Nebraska...
Come on, give them a little credit.
If Nebraska showed up like they did against Wisconsin, okay, they don't kick the shit out of them. It's a close game, and I think Nebraska wins.
And I don't dispute that with you because when we sat here a week ago, I said it's going to take turnovers and it's going to take a freak play.
I guarantee you the Nebraska team 2 days after that Iowa game, I guarantee you most of those guys were sitting around going, wow, that physically hurt. We got...
Hopefully mentally hurt too.
I'm sure. The way they looked, it almost looked like they didn't care. But I bet they...
That's a problem, by
I
the
bet
way.
They,
that's
I
a
bet
problem.
They physically hurt after that game. And I bet the Iowa players, after that game was over, were basically like, did we even play a game today?
And that's a problem. That's a serious problem.
Yeah.
The Nebraska season not over. The bowl game coming up. Rob and I are going to be here. We're going to take a couple weeks off because the Big Ten Championship coming up. Bowl bid will come out. We'll probably do a podcast maybe a week or two before the bowl bid, depending on what bowl it is. Right now we're looking at maybe the Outback Bowl or maybe the Music City Bowl in Nashville. Obviously, the Outback Bowl is the better of the two, but Iowa's being considered for that. Iowa's being considered for the Holiday Bowl. But right now it looks like, according to reports, and I'm just reading out of the Journal Star, the Outback Bowl or the Music City
against
Bowl.
Against an SEC team, likely.
Yeah.
I'm hearing LSU, and I'm hearing...
Arkansas, maybe?
I've heard maybe Arkansas. I'm actually hearing Florida.
Well, it depends on what Florida does this weekend against Alabama.
Yeah, which Florida's got a great defense and not much else.
Yeah, much like last year.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, I mean, but Nebraska, if it wants to build, and it's hard to say a bowl game can be a springboard because you're losing Tommy, and I get that.
It helped last year.
That's what I was going to say. It helped a lot last year.
I mean, the mindset going into the offseason, most Nebraska fans were pretty chipper after that bowl game going into the offseason. That spell between the end of the regular season and the bowl game.
I mean, look at the season UCLA had this year, and look at the season Nebraska had this year.
Yeah, I mean, that was a shock to the system. I don't think UCLA saw that coming. And I think Nebraska came out and played really well. I mean, if I'm Nebraska after that Iowa game, I'm really doing some deep soul searching and trying to evaluate what the hell were we thinking last Friday.
Okay, before we let you go, because we're 45 minutes into this thing, Big Ten Championship, Wisconsin or Penn State?
I think Wisconsin.
Okay.
I think Penn State's a little bit of smoke in the
Even though they won't win a championship, does Ohio State belong in the college football playoff?
I still think the Penn State loss is a wee bit fluky, and yeah, it's the way it worked out. I think they're the best team.
Oregon fires Mark Helfrich. They've asked to talk to Greg Schiano from Ohio State, which I find to be an odd fit.
It's a weird fit in my mind.
And the South Florida coach so far. God, I don't get what Oregon say. You know, the interesting thing, Rob, is, and I did this on my radio show this morning, Oregon is a good job. It's not a great job. And what I mean by that, sure, Phil Knight's got a lot of money and he'll back up the dump truck and dump it out at you, but it's not like you can go pull anybody from a real major school to go to Oregon to go coach for you.
And that's the interesting thing. It's on the surface, it looks like it'd be a great gig. It seems like they're – but even with you saying it's going to be hard to pull somebody major, it still seems like they're kind of shooting low.
I would agree. I thought my dark horse for that job was Mike Gundy. It doesn't seem like he's going to get it. I mean, him and Boone Pickens don't get along.
Yeah, all of a sudden they're kind of bumping heads.
But I will say this, Mark, and let this be a note to
him. How about Charlie Strong?
No, I don't think that could fly. I don't think it would fly. I don't think offensively it's the type of offense that Oregon wants. That's because right now Oregon has an identity. Uniforms just aren't the identity. The offense is part of that identity. Mark Helfrich was his own worst enemy.
How about Bobby Petrino?
Well, that's interesting.
I think he would be an awesome fit up there.
Well, I don't know if he's a fit anywhere because everybody says he's just an ass, but I think he's just so happy to be back with Louisville that he's just going to stay there. But let that be an example. If you inherit a program, Helfrich had Marcus Mariota. Chip Kelly set him up okay, but he relied on graduate transfers the last 2 years to be his quarterback, and you can't do that. You have to build with underclassmen.
Well, here's the other thing. I just don't think he was that good in terms of scheming things, and I don't think Brady Hoke was a great hire as a D coordinator. I would agree.
You know, a lot of people, Dave Remington actually on Facebook tonight says Scott Frost to Oregon. I don't know if Scott would do that. And I think Scott, who, by the way, took a team that went winless a year ago.
Bowl eligible
this year. They're going to go to a bowl. Scott's in a couple of years going to be able to name where he wants to go. Scott, in my view, Rob, is going to be one of the hottest coaching names out there in about 3 years, maybe sooner. He's got the largest public university in the state of Florida. He's got a fertile recruiting ground. I think he's going to be just fine.
I think he is. I hate saying he keeps proving people wrong because I don't think he's really got a lot of detractors.
But I know what you mean by that statement. I totally know what you mean by what you're saying.
Anytime there's questions about, well, how's he going to do at this level?
Yes.
He keeps answering those questions.
So was this good to do this podcast? You have it all off your chest now? Do you feel okay?
I'm still kind of pissed.
It's okay. In a year, you and I will do it over again.
I need a cleansing bowl game.
And I think you're going to get that. I really, really do.
I need a UCLA Foster Farms type performance to get this taste out of my mouth. I mean, it's that. Yeah, that was one of those. You know, it's like I said, I'm okay losing. But like I said, you better go down and punching, scratching, and clawing
one thing
the whole
you
way.
Really hate is having to face me after that.
No, I like you.
Because you're smarter than me. You And you just don't like it when I have a little bit of fun.
I'm just going to go home and count all my championship rings.
And you have a lot of them, and I'm jealous of them. Hey, did I mention that Dr. Rob and I were going to be sitting at the same table at the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 14th at the Rococo Theater? We are, and we'd love to see you there. It's a busy night, but Rob takes time to talk to people. I'm really a nobody. I just sit there and just watch Rob and his wife shake hands with everybody.
If you are a college or pro football fan, people show up. And I'm talking about former players.
Absolutely.
Dave brings in a lot of college legends and a lot of NFL guys. It's pretty damn impressive.
So we're not going to be back on a weekly basis. We'll probably do maybe one, maybe two more podcasts before the bowl game. We'll do one right after the bowl game. So kind of keep out for that. Follow us at Doc Talk Sports. You can follow us on Podbean. Make sure to like the podcast on Podbean. Give us a review on iTunes. That helps us get found. But we'll keep you up to date. And, of course, HuskerMax.com is always good about distributing the podcast. The bowl game announcement will come this weekend. We'll be back in a week or two to talk about the bowl game, what's coming up. We'll maybe do one right before the bowl game, then right afterwards. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. We'll talk to you soon.